Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs.
I do play on that discomfort straight away. I will find a young man in the audience and say, please don't worry, John, it's fine. I'm not even going to mention vaginal dryness, you're quite safe. And that's a lovely icebreaker and, you know, makes him laugh and it's fine that you're all uncomfortable, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I am navigating the wild throes of perimenopause. And over the next few weeks, I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails.
I absolutely forgive myself for any brain fog stuff. Yeah, I'm rubbish on names. I'm menopausal. It makes people laugh.
Welcome to On My Last Eggs, comedian Pauline Eyre. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Rachel. Hi.
Now, it's a great pleasure to have you because I love anyone who can make A, something productive out of the menopause, and B, something humorous out of the menopause, which you have managed to do both.
It is the comedy gift that keeps on giving.
It is a little bit, isn't it?
Damn straight.
Your show, All Change, is about menopause. Not entirely, but it's about it's about this place we find ourselves in now, suddenly at this time of our lives where everything seems to be not of our choosing.
Yes. So my comedy generally, when I perform in clubs and stuff, is usually about menopause. And my show takes a little wider than that, and sort of this moment of your life. Yeah, like you say, we're known as the sandwich generation, aren't we? Because we're looking after kids one side and elderly parents on the other. And so it is funny, sad, poignant. It has a bit of a sting in the tail, sadly, but there's a lot of laughs about the menopause because it's
And how do you find audiences react to it? Because I mean, I'm guessing it draws a little bit of a menopausal audience, but there will also be people in there who, you know, are either too young or they're men, or, you know, they just don't have any reference to it. How do they react to it?
I think, to be honest, I think we all suffer the menopause. It's lovely when you get couples. The last couple of shows I did in Edinburgh, we went after an older audience. So we went after, not older as actually just our age, but the sort of people that weren't generally being flyered in Edinburgh, flyering meaning, being asked to come to shows. And we've sold out every day because actually our group is crying out for entertainment and you know, not necessarily targeted for it with comedy. So I love it when there are couples in the audience, and with my show there are more likely to be couples in the audience, and I get lovely feedback from men because they recognize it all as well. And I think it helps generally to get people to talk about it. It's like, oh, that's not just that she's a bit moody, that's that she's got a thing where she has mood swings, and it makes it much easier to understand. I've had lots of young people come up to me actually in comedy clubs and say, oh, my mum, etc. And actually, if you're funny, I don't think it matters what the topic is. So when I do well in comedy generally, it's because audiences find what I have to say funny. And diversity in comedy is so important and so welcome. So actually, if you've got somebody on the bill who's, you know, a young man talking about Tinder, and you've got an older woman talking about menopause, it makes for a much more entertaining evening than four young men talking about Tinder. They don't all talk about Tinder. Some of them talk about plenty of fish. Not
No, I totally agree with that. I think it's definitely, you know, from the comedy bill point of view, you know, definitely to redress that balance. But I guess the difference is a young man talking about Tinder, depending on what he's saying, I suppose, is less likely to be slightly squirmy for people who, you know, there's still that stigma attached to menopause. So if you've got a 30-year-old guy in the audience and you're starting talking about menopause, you know, it might be, oh, I don't know, this is something that happens to old ladies. I don't know, I'm a bit uncomfortable about it. You know, is she going to go somewhere that is uncomfortable? Yes. As I suppose the Tinder thing, it's more of a universal, you know, we've all looked for love or whatever,
yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that I hear in, like, I have never been on a dating app. I've been married for nearly 30 years. Dating apps, you know, weren't invented in those days. If somebody's funny about Tinder, I'm really happy to laugh because I'm being in their life for 20 minutes. If they're not funny, or if it's the same old stuff, then it's different. I do play on that discomfort straight away. One of my first jokes, I play on that. I will find a young man in the audience and say, please don't worry, find out his name, please don't worry, John, it's fine. I'm not even going to mention vaginal dryness. You're quite safe. And that's a lovely icebreaker, and, you know, makes him laugh, and it's fine that you're all uncomfortable, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. I love that line. It's one of my favourites.
Talking of vaginal dryness, we should get straight to symptoms. I feel with this podcast, it's a bit like in Bridget Jones's diary, where she says, you know, supposed to introduce somebody with, you know, with two interesting facts about themselves. I feel with menopause, it's like, you know, we should introduce ourselves with two symptoms we have, you know. Hello, I'm Rachel. I suffer with vaginal dryness and brain fog.
Yes.
What about you, Pauline?
I was going to say brain fog, definitely brain fog. And more recently, night sweats. I've been lucky on the vaginal dryness front so far, but night sweats were the thing that made me go, right, no, that's it, no more. I haven't actually had a terrible menopause. It's just all of this change and all of these things happening. But night sweats were the straw that broke the camel's back. It's like, right, I'm doing something about this. I'm going on HRT because I can't live that way. If I can't sleep and get what I need, then I can't function.
Yeah, it's an amazing domino effect with menopause symptoms, I think, sometimes as well, because, you know, I think most of us would say, well, we could deal with one thing or two things or three things. And I think the sleep thing is a really important thing. So I don't get night sweats, but I do get interrupted sleep.
Yes.
So I also get weird bouts of itchy skin, and then sometimes I wake up with itchy skin and then I can't go back to sleep and I can't stop itching, and I'm like, oh, this is great. And so then the next day, of course, you know, everything else is going to feel worse just because you're tired, you know. So everything completely impacts.
Actually, I did get a new one recently, and this has happened a couple of times over the years, but happened two or three times recently, and then so badly the other day. I got sudden cramps in the night in my legs. In fact, it was so bad in my foot, I started screaming. My husband thought I was having a nightmare. And so he's kind of laughing.
Great.
I'm like, get round here right now and lift my foot, because I couldn't put my foot down in order to put weight on it. It was so awful and so agonizing. And there's nothing you can do, except I then, in the middle of the night, Googled menopause and cramps. And oh, yes, it is a symptom. And then there's a very simple solution. I've started taking magnesium, haven't had a cramp since.
I hear magnesium is a bit of a wonder supplement when it comes to menopause. I've heard this from, you know, from various quarters. But I looked into magnesium, and then there's like 10 different types of magnesium. And then I kind of stopped there because I was like, oh, I don't know what magnesium I need, you know.
I got the one they sell at Sainsbury's online.
There you go. That's probably the one I need as well. But apparently, like, you know, there's one magnesium that's for sleep, but don't take that if you need magnesium for cramp. So, you know, you can report back how your cramp's going with your magnesium.
This is called Nature's Bounty magnesium.
Nature's Bounty sounds great, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? And also the packaging matches my nail polish, so it's definitely the right one for me.
Very nice. Definitely. I love the idea that we might pick our supplements because it matches something we're wearing. Oh, I never take vitamin C. Orange
research.
Is not my colour.
Yeah, evidence-based research, really important.
Yeah. So you're on HRT.
Yes.
I've become especially interested in HRT in the last few weeks because I am relatively new to it. And, you know, it took me a long time. Like you were saying about the night sweats was the thing that made you go, right, I need help. One of my early peri symptoms was terrible periods, really heavy periods and flooding and periods close together. That got sorted out with a Marina coil and some of my other symptoms as well. So that was a few years ago, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm much better now. But then other things started creeping in, and I thought, well, I'll go for the HRT. But I haven't really seen a huge change or benefit. I mean, it's still quite early days. How long have you been on HRT, and what's the difference? What are your benefits so far?
I think it's probably been about 18 months. The night sweats generally have gone. The sudden waking up and being suddenly bathed in sweat has gone. Now, if I wake up in the night and I'm hot, I look across and he's thrown the covers off as well. So it dealt with that, which was the thing. But I was very blocked on taking it. I assumed I couldn't because I had obstetric cholestasis when I had twins who are 17. And in that pregnancy, I had this condition which affected my liver. And I had liver function tests for 6 months afterwards until my liver returned to normal. And I vaguely remember somebody saying, oh, that was caused by, because it was a twin pregnancy, it was double the estrogen, therefore you should probably avoid HRT. And at the time I was kind of, you know, I was of the mindset of A, I won't need it anyway, and B, oh, well, I would never take that. I've never taken the pill. I've never wanted to mess with my hormones particularly. And I know I 100% understand the history of the pill in terms of feminism, but in terms of modern feminism, I always felt very strongly, why should I mess with my hormones and my bodily functions for contraception? But that's a whole nother podcast, isn't it? But anyway, so
I also avoided the pill. Yeah. And I agonized about even having the Mirena coil, because that was a hormonal intervention, but it really was the best thing that I did. But I really sympathize and I'm on the same train with you on that.
And I'm also not somebody who has ever been keen to take medication generally. I'd rather have a headache and know that I need to deal with there's something causing a headache than my worry is always, you know, if I cover things with pain relief, then I won't know that I've got a problem in my body, sort of thing. So I've always been like reluctant to take pills. But actually then when I started opening my mind a little bit to it, going, do you know what? It would be really nice to sort this out. And then I also became aware of the benefits longer term in terms of osteoporosis and stuff. And thought, actually, my mum had horrific arthritis all her life. If I can avoid that as I age, then maybe I need to look into this. Asked my doctor, she looked it up. There's no link between that and obstetric cholestasis. It's not a reason I couldn't take it. So I could go and do the research. And then felt quite happy to, actually. You know, my body is lacking something at the moment, see if this works. And I started on a lower dose, and then I'm now on a slightly higher dose than I was, and I'm happy with it. And I'm sort of, the idea of taking it long term and improving my bone health was really important to me. I still have the brain fog stuff. I don't know if I could, you know, if I increase the dosage, whether that sort of stuff would improve. I'm not too worried about it. I absolutely forgive myself for any brain fog stuff.
Yeah, me too. And I just say to people, okay, all the words have gone. It's my brain fog. Someone else say something for a minute, you know.
Yeah. I'm rubbish on names. I'm menopausal. Make people laugh.
That's a great excuse, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So you
slap my child around the face. Oh, menopausal. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, is it? Could it be a defence in court? Who knows? Let's put it to the test sometime. When you were looking for an audience, an older audience, or a more, you know, menopausal audience potentially, where did you go to flyer them? Were you outside Specsavers?
No.
Where were you? Where were you looking for them? Where do we all hang out? Where will I find my tribe?
It's specifically in Edinburgh during the Fringe, Grass Market. Glorious, lovely place where the road just opens up, having been quite industrial, and it's full of cafes. And a lovely cafe. So people in Edinburgh on a sunny August day, I didn't say warm, but I did say sunny. And yeah, people would sit in and outside the cafes at lunchtime having, and quite often actually with the last show, we would see lots of parents our age having lunch with their student age children. And that was great because you appeal to, you know, two parents waiting for our kids to bugger off and leave home is exactly where they were at that moment. So lots of lovely people around there, and actually quite nice to target, if you like, different audience, actually to go out to people and say, hi, I think this is a show that you'll like, because they were being ignored by most of the flyers, because that you're looking for other people in their 20s to do your comedy to, and that's fair enough.
You know, when you don't get handed things in the street, yes, like by people, is that thing, you don't that get is targeted by people anymore, you're like, oh
yeah, that's an invisible slipped thing, out of a demo.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just invisible to you.
I mean, it's a relief sometimes, because you don't want to be carrying little bits of paper around with you, or take a piece of paper that's only going to end up in landfill or whatever. But equally, when you you see them thrusting these things into the hands of other people, and then very pointedly decide not to give it to you.
I'm in pubs now more than I have been in my whole life because I did comedy, and I will quite often go up to the bar alone, and I am completely invisible. It's shocking how invisible I am. And I've even stood at the bar and gone, am I completely invisible, as people sort of reach over me and pass me, etc. I'm just not seen. because I'm probably, I don't know, I'm not young and hot. I'm not in a group. So it's not as, you know, I might be asking for one drink instead of four. I don't know what it is, but I just don't get seen. I did a lovely gig once where I had a joke about that. And I came off stage and the bar was at the back of the room. And I had a joke about, I'll never get a Pinot Grigio. And as I walked off the stage, the barman just put a huge Pinot Grigio on the bar for me for free. He's like, I love you. You're my favourite. Such a triumphant moment of somebody listened to me and what I wanted to drink. Thank you.
Let's hear a little bit from Pauline's show, All Change Now.
I was booked to perform like on a comedy night, and the guy who was running, he made one of those Facebook event pages for it, and I looked at the page, there was a list of all the comedians performing, and my name wasn't on there, and I knew straight away why, because probably we've all read the articles, haven't we? Women over 50, we're invisible. It's true. Just because I'm no longer in the running to be Britain's next top model, apparently you can't see me. God bless you, it's fine, you're allowed to laugh at that. I never aspired to being a model. I can never commit, you know, to putting on that much height. I called the guy out on it. I said, you sexist, ageist bastard. I did. I said, you left me off that list. And he said, I think you're looking at last month's event, not this month's event. The irony. I'm not having periods anymore. I don't know what month it is. Ah! Give me a cheer for the menopause. Don't! No! No! It's crap! It's shit! I'm all over the place! I'm forgetful, I'm irritable, I repeat myself all the time, coming to terms with the fact that I'll never present country file. And I do really ditzy things, like I was never this person. I went out and washed my shower curtain, okay, took it out of the machine, went to hang it on the line outside, and it had started raining. Yeah. And I lost my shit. Whoa, I can't hang the shower curtain up outside. What am I going to do? I ended up calling my husband on the phone and going, where am I going to hang the bloody shower curtain? Now I can't hang it on a hanger. It'll fall off. Now I can't hang it on the radiator. It's going to get dusty on the floor. I'm going to keep going till you all get it. Because it took me ages. I'm not a stupid person. I've got 2 degrees. Thank you. I mean, to be fair, the first one was in drama, but nevertheless.
I've started to think about my next show, which I think is going to be about my body in a very general way, which of course feeds into this. Well, this feeds into as well, because everything is changing. But it's also about how my attitudes are changing and how my, can I swear, how my giving a fuck is changing. And also I have a child who is trans and is going through that. And I think there's an interesting angle there as a parent. And it really got me to thinking about my relationship with my body and my child's relationship with their body, and how I have spent, I've wasted so much of my life hating my body. Hmm. I didn't know I was blooming born compared with somebody whose gender is different from their sex. That is so much to contend with, let alone society. That's where I think I'm heading next. I don't think it necessarily means I will park menopause, because I'll still be at this time of my life. I literally want to go through each bit of my body, because every time I get hurt or ill, I always think that's my fault because I'm overweight all my life.
Oh, really?
Oh, I've got a foot injury. That's because I do a lot of exercise and I'm actually carrying too much weight and my poor feet are taking too much. It's just literally anything I will go back to. Well, you know, if I were 2 stone lighter, then that would. And that's a quite deeply ingrained bit of crap. Oh, I'm doing too much exercise, which I'm not. I do exercise.
Yeah, but I was going to say, but it's like... you're being preventative. You're less likely to get injuries if you don't do too much exercise, yeah. Pauline. You are looking after yourself.
But it's this idea that even when I'm doing the virtuous thing of taking care of my mental and physical health by exercising, I still have a bit of me going, well, it's your own fault, because you're just bad, aren't you? So there's stuff to explore there that I want to go on to. And then as my body ages, I find it fascinating how I feel about it, how I look at my body and what my body looks like.
I don't really think I changed in my 20s. I mean, I had my first child at 21, so that wrecked my body to start with. So I'm like, okay, that's that over. You know, I was a terrible stretch mark. So it was changed pretty early on. But I don't really think I changed much during my 20s and possibly even my 30s. And then, you know, I changed a bit in my 40s. But my gosh, since turning 50, which is 5-6 years ago, it's just, you look at bits of you and you go, whoa, what happened to that leg? Why is it all crepey and weird? Like, where did that come from? Or, you know, it is.
Bruises don't heal.
And they just come.
Bruises that have lasted 2 years.
I think you should go to the doctor with that.
No, I fell getting on the tube and I really fell badly. And I had a massive, huge and very deep bruise. And I mentioned it to a GP. I was like, no, it's fine. It's just age. It's taking, like, it just took almost 2 years. It was still a little bit tender, a little bit blue for such a long time. And then during the lockdown last year, I got hit by a paving slab, my own.
I thought you were going to say a bus, but it's a paving slab. It's quite bad. It's quite a bad story.
Oh, it was painful. So loose paving slab in my own garden, so I can't even sue. And stepped on it and it hit me in the shin. And it was such a big lump. So much so that it's got a name. lump on my leg, and it was a really nasty deep bruise. God, it hurt so much at the time. And we call it Uluru because it's the name of Ayers Rock, and I'm Ayer, so it's Uluru on my leg. And I have a dear friend who's a GP, and I just sent her a photo and went, this is just a bruise and a big lump that won't go away, isn't it, because it's definitely caused by this bruise. And she went, oh yeah, no, that's varicose. Great. Okay, that's what that is then. And that wouldn't have happened years ago. I'd have hurt myself and then I've got better. Now, if I hurt myself, I think, well, is that going to be a permanent thing? It's going to be a permanent scar or a permanent lump.
I think that's the worry for me, is the speed at which your body changes does make you think, well, yeah, people live into their 90s. This skin will have just fallen off me by then. I mean, it's so thin and crepey and, you know, it is a really interesting point, our relationship with our bodies. And we are under so much pressure. And I know, you know, it's talked about a lot. And I think our generation was under a different sort of pressure. I think weight was definitely a really big issue for us. We were brought up with the Slim Seer girl and the Nimble Bread and Rye Vitas and, you know, all this, the beginning of the diet industry. Coke. You know, Diet Coke, Tab. Do you remember Tab?
Yes, I do.
We used to have Tab before Diet Coke came along. and my mum used to eat little sweets called AIDS, which they soon went out of fashion. Slim Fast, all of those things were coming out. And you know, and we as girls, I think, I don't know what it was like in your household, we saw our mothers doing that and we saw our mothers worrying about their weight. And my mum has never allowed herself to get overweight. I strongly suspect that she naturally would have a propensity to be a little more rotund if she allowed herself to, but incredibly controlled. A snack in the evening for my mum would be 10 raisins.
Oh, that's horrible.
I always had I was a bit of a chubby girl, you know, on the beach as kids. I mean, looking back at me now, you know, very normal, really, you know, maybe a little chubbier than other girls, but, you know, not fat by any stretch of the imagination. But I always felt a little bit like I was letting my mum down by not having the same self-control that she had. And she wasn't doing, you know, she never said, oh, look at you or anything, you know, but I was just, it was just around me. And I do think our generation carries that issue with weight. And we also, circumstantially, we also are from a generation where we first had the opportunity to have convenience food to such a degree. So our parents' generation, they were war children and they didn't have that access. So we've got this sort of access to things that are much more likely to make us put on weight. Yes. And then the kind of stigma that goes around it. And I think that's a very difficult burden to have carried.
Yeah, I do too. And it's weirdly, it's becoming less important. Well, it's not weird, it's right. It's becoming less important as I'm more concerned with taking care of my health. So as I grow older, I want to age healthily. And therefore, I want to stop yo-yo dieting. And God, I love this body. Gets me to the gym. It gets me through a workout. It gets me home again. It's carried baby twins. It is pretty bloody brilliant. And the fact that it's, you know, it's flabby from carrying baby twins is an absolute triumph. It's a triumph. What a brilliant body it is.
I agree.
I thought the neck was a bit smooth.
I think it's just when you take yourself by surprise by going, whoa, who's that in the mirror? Oh, it's me. Yes. And if you ever turn your phone or your camera on when you, the wrong way around on your phone, I mean, that is a wake-up call every time, isn't it? It's like some hideous Jim Henson creation or something there.
Who wouldn't want to be a Muppet then?
So your next show will be about the body. Well, I like that a lot. I think that's something we should be exploring a bit more. And I agree with you. I see my body as this incredible thing that's carried me from A to B. Any thoughts I have now about my weight are really wrapped up in health. And actually, you know, if somebody said you will live to a long and healthy life if you put on another 4 stone, I would put on another 4 stone because I don't really care about how I look anymore. I want to feel my best version of me. I think we all want to do that. But how I look doesn't really matter. I get annoyed if I ever have to buy bigger clothes, because the last time I was this big, I threw away the bigger clothes afterwards because I thought I'll never be that big again. Yes, annoying.
Yeah, I have a variety of sizes now, and I'm in my 12 clothes or I'm in my 14 clothes and it's fine, or I'm in 16 clothes or whatever it is. It's just, I prefer that tennis skirt when I'm slimmer. I prefer that tennis skirt when I'm fatter. That's fine.
Well, I'm impressed that you're playing tennis, Pauline. I mean, that's like a proper sport. That's not even exercising. You're doing a sport, Pauline.
Yes, yes. And it's an aggressive sport, which really helps in the menopause.
Oh, listen, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us on My Last Eggs. Comedian Pauline Eyre, let's see what you do next about bodies, eh?
Thank you.